This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined early on in the week, as always, by Adam Burke. And let me start by issuing an apology. It's been kind of a crazy week with games being played on Thursday and Wednesday. So I know we've been absent in the feed for a little while here, and I haven't been able to get Adam on as well. So I just owe a lot of people apologies. But we're back at it. Should have three podcasts for you guys before these games kick off on Thursday and Friday. Notre Dame, Penn State, Thursday night at the Orange Bowl. And then, well, not at the Orange Bowl, in the Orange Bowl at Hard Rock Stadium. And the Cotton Bowl, which of course not played at the Cotton Bowl, played at AT&T Stadium, Ohio State and Texas. Mr. Burke, that is a little confusing. I guess with the way that conferences are these days, we used to have an Orange Bowl. That stadium, I believe, has been blown up. And we have the Cotton Bowl, but we don't play the Cotton Bowl there. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you can get more people in Jerry World.
That's right.
And probably get more for those tickets as well. But first of all, yeah, I mean, my apologies. You know, I was out of town. I went home for Christmas and
you
got to spend some time with the friends and family. Shame on me.
Yeah, Adam, what's wrong with you? Think about people instead of your family.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, believe me, being around family, there were times where I kind of thought about maybe it'd be better to be in my routine. But no, you know, head home. That was nice, especially, you know, with what's going on with Ohio State. Shit, what's going on with the Cavs, too?
Yeah.
You know, they're the talk of the town because the Browns aren't. But yeah, you know, went home and then now kind of settling back in a little bit to being back, been back for a little under a week now. So glad we were able to finally get together and talk about this thing, because I think we got two real interesting semifinal games here.
Yeah, no doubt. And let's jump into the latter first, the Cotton Bowl, which has Ohio State taking on Texas. And Ohio State, it's funny, I don't know if it was the last time we spoke, but certainly the anger and frustration from you as you spoke for, I would say, the majority of Ohio State fans was bubbling up at the surface after the Michigan game. And as that week went on, and we talked about it here on the podcast, that ultimately, I think on the podcast, I had Tennessee team total under, but I also played Ohio State against Tennessee. And I was kicking myself because I was on the air New Year's Day and I didn't end up getting to the window on Ohio State against Oregon. And that was a easy, easy winner. So in your eyes, as someone who knows that program as well as you do, what has changed? And does this to you feel kind of like, I don't want to say 2019 LSU, because that team's maybe one of the greatest, if not the greatest, college football team ever assembled. But it kind of feels a little bit like 2023 UConn basketball, where they just got hot in the NCAA tournament and they just pulverized everyone in their way.
Well, I mean, everything's changed, right? They're throwing the football. They've finally seemed to have understood that nobody in the country can cover Jeremiah Smith. So he's just making plays all over the field. You know, and that was the thing. I mean, in the game against Oregon, you really didn't see much of Emeka Egbuka. You didn't see Carnell Tate at all whatsoever. And Tate was a guy who was, you know, a really big piece for them in the game against Penn State, some of the other games during the regular season. But they're just letting Jeremiah Smith eat. And Will Howard's getting him the football. And Will Howard looks like a super confident dude right now, which, again, kind of lends itself to thinking that he was probably concussed in that game against Michigan with just how awful he played in that game. But Ohio State's a completely different team. I don't know if Ryan Day had his, you know, come to Woody moment during the break, if it was the team-led meetings, if it was the boosters saying, hey, bro, you better win this thing or you're gone. I don't know what it was, but, I mean, they've hung 83 points on Tennessee and Oregon. They've only given up 38. They've got a ton of explosives in the passing game, which is creating a lot more opportunities in the run game. You know, you want to look ahead, right, as an Ohio State fan. You want to look ahead and look at this point. They have no excuse for not winning this whole thing. Between the way that they're playing and the three teams that are left, they have no excuse for not winning this whole thing. I know you're a Notre Dame fan. Sorry, Tim. It's the reality.
Don't disagree.
But you look at them and you just, it's hard to be excited about this and the fact that, you know, they're the favorite to win the national championship and absolutely should do it, and still sit there and look back at that Michigan game and go, how the hell did that happen? Because this is the team we all thought they were going to be. Why weren't they that team on that Saturday in Columbus?
That said, though, can you get over the fact that they lost to Michigan, but now, as you alluded to, and I believe absolutely they should be the favorite, and at this point it would be a bit of a disappointment if they are not the favorite, or don't win at all. I know it sucks and you hate your neighbor to the north. That said, winning a national championship, does it not trump beating these guys or winning the national title?
Well, the problem is that team up north last year beat Ohio State and then won the title.
That's true.
So it still feels like they kind of have a leg up. But I think the redemption arc of this team is something that people are going to celebrate, right? You, number one, you want to beat Michigan. Number two, you want to win a championship. I think is the order in which it goes in Columbus for the fan base, all of that. Does it ease a lot of the pain and ease a lot of the sting? It absolutely does. But you lose a fifth time in a row to that team next year, a lot of that goodwill is going to be kind of gone. So, you know, it's kind of like it's look, Ohio State fan, we just have such a bastardized view of everything because this team should be in this position every single year. They should be playing for a national championship. They should have an undefeated or one loss regular season. You know, one loss being more understandable now because of realignment and the conference just getting stronger as a whole. It's such a weird thing because I think what kind of pisses me off as a fan is because you lost that game, you feel like you can't enjoy this as much. And I think a lot of Ohio State fans are kind of wrestling with that. That being said, I think my view will probably change. They win this week and if they win again January 20th.
All right, let's get into the game because we were talking about it off the air. So right now, Ohio State out to a 6-point favorite. I think they opened up 4.5 at most spots, and that quickly got hit up to 6.5. I was curious if we'd see a 7. Have not seen a 7 yet. Maybe we'll get there. I don't see many, you know, the way my brain works is I was waiting to see if this got to 7, and maybe I would be intrigued by the dog here in Texas. It does feel like a buy low, sell high. Ohio State's never been playing better. Texas fortunate to beat Arizona State as a double-digit favorite. And let's be honest, Texas in the biggest games of the year, maybe outside of Texas A&M, if you want to say that was a big game, it was. It was College Game Day, final game of the regular season, and they won that game to get it to the SEC championship. But they lost to Georgia both times. They've had a couple other performances. You look at this Ohio State team, I think what you said is right. I mean, this is the best they've looked. It feels like they've figured something out, and I haven't laid it yet. I don't know if I will, but I would look at Texas initially, but I think what we were talking about off the air, I want to bring the air now because it does feel like this Ohio State team is on another level. And honestly, in college football this year, Adam, we've been wondering if there were teams capable of, you know, 2020 Clemson, 2019 LSU, 2022 Alabama. And the way Ohio State's playing right now, it certainly feels like maybe that is the possibility there with the Buckeyes.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably a pretty thick limb to go out on. But to me, there's a much better chance of Ohio State winning this game in blowout fashion than there is of Texas winning the game. Look, I mean, I realize that, you know, from a talent standpoint, Texas is a clear step up from Tennessee. I still would take Oregon. Oregon would be favored over Texas if they were playing here this week. So I think what Ohio State did to the Ducks was very impressive. And you could argue, you know, the long layoff and all of that. You could say that was very hurtful for Oregon. Yeah, sure. I mean, Ohio State, though, they've been up, you know, 35-0 at the end of the first quarter in their two playoff games combined. So they've been starting fast. And if they do that here against Texas, I think they'll just be able to blow them out. The thing about Texas is this, right? So they ran the ball very effectively against Clemson. Very, very effectively. I didn't expect that to be the case, which was why I was on Clemson in that game. I thought it would come down to Quinn Ewers. I thought that, you know, Cade Klubnik would win that quarterback battle. Ultimately, he did. But Clemson just couldn't stop the Texas run. And so that was the difference in that game. Arizona State stopped the Texas run. Texas had 1.8 yards per carry in that game. Quinn Ewers had 322 on just 20 completions, the three touchdowns. That was what kind of allowed them to prevail, allowed them to persevere. And I mean, if Dillingham doesn't call the, you know, the zero blitz there at the end of, you know, at the end of the game there, you know, I mean, in the end of the first overtime,
yeah,
like we're talking about a completely different narrative. But Texas to me, and this is the problem that I've had with Texas. They didn't play South Carolina. They didn't play Ole Miss. They didn't play Tennessee. Remember, all the talk about Tennessee going into the game against Ohio State was their defensive line was going to win the day. Didn't happen, but Tennessee was statistically an outstanding front seven, an outstanding defensive front four. Texas didn't play, in my opinion, the three best defensive lines in the SEC. Ohio State's defensive line is playing at an elite level. They're getting a ton of pressure. They sacked Dillon Gabriel, what, seven times? He's sacked 14 times for the season as a whole. Like, they're just playing at an incredible level, not getting the benefit of any holding calls whatsoever. I don't think Texas can run the football on them. And if Texas can't run the football on Ohio State, then it falls on Quinn Ewers. And I don't trust Ewers against a defense this talented, against a guy in Jim Knowles who's had two excellent game plans here so far. I think we're more likely to see Texas get blown out than we are to see them pull off the upset here.
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been much, and we've talked about it. You know, Matt and I have certainly talked about it a bunch. There hasn't been a ton to be impressed about regarding Texas. And as that game was going on and I was on the air New Year's Day doing the, you know, tailgate show, and I was watching it and I was kicking myself for not taking some Arizona State in game because, you know, that number got out to 24.5, whatever it ultimately did in Arizona State. You know, obviously had a chance to win that game outright in overtime. They do cover all the numbers. But you could see that Texas team was getting gassed at them because the offense really couldn't get much of anything going here on that day. So you're going to have to, right now, you're going to have to keep pace with this Ohio State team, which is just, it's crazy to think, and I don't mean to bring the Michigan game up again, but it's like, how did that happen? And whether it was just awful play calling, whether it was tightness, this Ohio State team, from what we've seen the last 2 weeks, nobody should be able to hold them down. And Michigan was able to do it as a, you know, almost three touchdown underdog. So yeah, I do ultimately want to see if I could kind of hold my nose and play Texas here, but what we've seen these last 2 weeks, it's hard for me to envision Ohio State slowing down from an offensive standpoint.
No, and they shouldn't, right? I mean, they've been extremely aggressive, and I think that's been, you know, the really big strength for them. And, you know, the patchwork offensive line has held up really, really well, right? I mean, we can talk about Jeremiah Smith all we want, and we absolutely should, because, I mean, that kid is a stud. But this is an Ohio State team here, you know, 156 yards rushing against Tennessee, 181, almost 6 yards a carry against Oregon, and you know, of course, Oregon's defensive front was definitely exposed by Penn State in the Big Ten championship game. Like, I don't know that Ohio State gets to 150 rushing yards in this game against Texas, but the offensive balance they've been able to show, the pre-snap motion out of Chip Kelly, there may be something to be said about them leaving a lot of things in the bag. And I don't know why they didn't come out against Michigan. I'm convinced at this point that Will Howard was concussed throughout that game. Like, it's the only explanation I can think of for him to be as bad and as off as he was. Also, I mean, the mental aspect, I guess, of that Michigan game, right? I mean, now they're kind of going out there. They look like a team playing free and easy,
yeah,
instead of a team playing really, really tight. And I don't know if that's something that Ryan Day has installed philosophically. I don't know if some of the leaders on this team just kind of took up the mantle and said, look, like, just let us eat. Right. I mean, you're paying a lot of money for us. This is a very expensive roster, a lot of recruiting stars in that locker room. Like, maybe Ryan Day just said, you know what? You guys just go out there and do what you do. And Chip Kelly is, you know, kind of allowing that to happen too. I don't know. I wish I knew kind of all the inner workings and all the dynamics. And then you look at the Texas side of things, and like, for all the talk of Steve Sarkisian being this play calling genius and this great scripter and all of that, I haven't seen it in the two playoff games. Well, I guess there's been a moment here and there, but I mean, I haven't seen it. I think this defense is overrated. We could argue if the SEC has been overrated in general throughout the course of the year based on the bowl results that we've had. I don't know. I just think Ohio State is the way that they're mobilized right now. I don't think Texas can hang with them. And if Ewers gives the ball up, if he doesn't protect the football, and he played very poorly in those two games against Georgia, if he doesn't protect the football here, that's just even more fuel for Ohio State to go out and win this thing comfortably. And frankly, I kind of hope that they do. I mean, I know everybody wants an exciting game. I mean, I personally don't. But give me, 14-0 end of one, up 17 or 21 at halftime. Just keep riding this wave. Don't even give them the chance to believe.
Well, I'll say this. If you believe that it's going to be a blowout against Texas, I think there might be value in looking at some of these look-ahead lines. So DraftKings right now, and it's also worth noting, right? If you play a look-ahead line, Ohio State -7.5 against Penn State, and Penn State loses to Notre Dame, you get your money back. That's a voided ticket. This isn't a futures market where you're putting into that pool. At least at DraftKings, if you're betting into a look-ahead market and the matchup doesn't happen, you get your money back. So would you be interested in looking at Ohio State -7 and Ohio State -7.5 in the national championship against Penn State or Notre Dame right now? Notre Dame catching 7, Penn State catching 7.5. Do you think this is a freight train type of deal? By the way, worth noting, so far in the college football playoff, favorites 8-0 straight up and 7-1 against the spread.
Well, I think it's interesting, right? Ohio State's a 6-point favorite here this week against Texas, right? 7 against Notre Dame, 7.5 against Penn State. Texas is favored over both of those teams by larger margins than if you just kind of adjust the number. So I think that's a little bit strange. With Texas, 2.5-point favorite over Notre Dame, 3 against Penn State. I guess you have to give Texas the benefit of the doubt. If you go out there and beat an Ohio State team that looks like a juggernaut, you got to respect that quite a bit. But I think the thing that would be a little bit difficult, for Ohio State here is obviously there's a lot of familiarity with Penn State, but we know James Franklin is just awful in big games. He hasn't played one yet in the playoff because in my mind, they've had the easiest path to this point. But there's familiarity there, right? That's probably going to kind of tighten that game up a little bit. And I think Notre Dame's defense is really, really good. I do think they would maybe have a chance to kind of slow Ohio State down to some degree. But then again, I mean, this new look Chip Kelly team is just such a wild card because this isn't really what we saw all regular season long. Even in the games they won in blowout fashion, it wasn't really like this. It didn't feel the same. So, I think you could definitely make a case to take Ohio State, in those look ahead markets, especially because, if Notre Dame advances, right? I know we're going to get to this in a second here. Is Jeremiah Love really going to be in that better of a shape, 10, 11 days from now? Riley Leonard was the most explosive runner for them by far against Georgia. Their longest pass play was 14 yards. Like Ohio State's explosiveness definitely trumps both of those teams in those particular matchups. So you could certainly make a case, I think, for 7 or 7.5 and taking Ohio State in those look ahead markets. And I just want to say this too, this isn't just me drinking the Ohio State Kool-Aid, being a fan. This is just the type of team that they always had the potential to be. And they're very, very terrifying when they're playing at that level.
Look, and I'll say this, I knew the skill position players were elite. I did not believe in Will Howard. And what you mentioned, the performance we saw from him in the Rose Bowl was the best football I've ever seen him play. I mean, some of the throws that he made, and he was fantastic against Tennessee. And I know he only completed 17 passes in the Rose Bowl. They didn't need anything more from him. I mean, the first half, the game was over. I mean, whether it was the playmakers getting open or being schemed open, a little bit of both. When you think about how he played, how Jeremiah Smith played, how Emeka Egbuka played, having Judkins and Henderson combined for over 170 rushing yards, this is what I think Ohio State fans were hoping for entering this year. And I always said, I don't know if I trust Will Howard. Well, if he plays like he did in the Rose Bowl, they're winning a national championship. I mean, the throw he made to Emeka Egbuka and the catch from Egbuka somehow, some way. I think that was to make it 14-0, I believe. I don't know. All the touchdowns kind of blend together. But if he plays like that, there's no one stopping him. And we'll get into Notre Dame Penn State here momentarily. But yeah, I think from at least a Notre Dame standpoint, yeah, the defense is really good. But do they have enough firepower offensively? Because you can't. I was surprised that Notre Dame held Georgia to 10 points, but the playmakers out wide for Georgia aren't even close to what Ohio State has out wide heading into, you know, the semifinal and then the national championship. I do want to go ahead.
I just want to say, I think the biggest thing here for Will Howard has been, for the most part in these two playoff games, his first read is open. Right. When you think about the game against Michigan, he wasn't getting his first read. He was having to go through his progressions. The offensive line, that's where you kind of saw them be a bit of a problem. And also, again, I don't know if he was completely processing everything accurately and clearly. But whatever adjustments Chip Kelly has made here, the first read has been open. And whether it's been kind of misdirection or just Jeremiah Smith beating a dude off the line or, you know, some kind of little movement pre-snap that gets Egbuka open in space, something like that. Like, the first read has primarily been there. And every quarterback is going to be really good as a first read quarterback when that's there. I think where Will Howard struggled throughout the course of the season was if that first read wasn't available, then things kind of collapsed. Things kind of broke down a little bit. That's where you saw the offensive line kind of struggle. And I think they had kind of told him, like, hey, because, you know, I mean, they're not going to admit this, but because we're not super confident in Devin Brown, like, we don't want you to run at all. He ran a little bit in that Tennessee game when the first read wasn't open. Didn't have to do that at all against Oregon. So I think that he's just kind of playing with sort of more of a, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like a gunslinger ability, where it's just first read, boom, ball's out, and that guy's open. So unless Texas has an answer for that, then I think they're just going to continue to cook on offense.
So let's get into a couple props. We won't dive too crazy into them, but Jeremiah Smith, and I think it was our friend Chris Felica, who has just been riding his anytime touchdown the last couple of weeks, and you are getting plus money on the Jeremiah Smith anytime touchdown. That ain't the case no longer. Right now at DraftKings, it's minus 140. At FanDuel, it's minus 155. But Jeremiah Smith, right now, these last two games, these two playoff games, where he went into, what, the Oregon game, Adam, and said, nobody can cover me. And he's not wrong. He's had 13 catches for 290 yards, four touchdowns in these last two games. He even scored a touchdown in the Michigan game as well. Anytime touchdown, let's start with that, minus 140. I know we don't like laying juice all that often, but at that price, is it worth the squeezing? Is Jeremiah Smith going to get into the end zone against Texas?
I mean, Chip Kelly has found ways to get him open. And if he's open, he's going to catch the football and he's going to score. So minus 140, yeah, I mean, I would certainly think so. Again, you got to think about this too, where I know Parker Fleming at Stats of War put out his projection today, and his projection is a much lower total than what's out there in the market. But this is a total of 53.5 with Ohio State a 6-point favorite. The expectation here is for the Buckeyes to get, you know, kind of towards that mid to upper 20 range or maybe a little bit higher. So yeah, that's one of those situations where I think it makes sense because they're just feeding him. And not only that, he's scoring from distance too. You know, it's not like these are all red zone looks or something like that. He's scoring from distance too, just because they're scripting so well. So yeah, even at minus 140, I think you really got to take a look at it, and maybe even 2+ at 425, which he's done in both playoff games here so far.
So what about Jeremiah Smith from a receiving standpoint? Mention his numbers so far. 103 against Tennessee, 187 against Oregon. His numbers, his over-under at FanDuel, which is a two-way market, 84.5. And then at DraftKings, it's not a two-way market, but you can, you know, ladder it if you'd like to go that route. And you could go 80+ minus 120, 90+ plus 120, 100+ plus 165. He's going to be the most popular bet person, I would imagine, in this game. But knowing the way that he's played so far, I certainly wouldn't push back on anyone looking at, you know, plus 165 over 100 receiving yards.
Well, and remember, I mean, the weather was pretty pristine at the Rose Bowl, but the weather was not very good in Columbus when he had six catches for 103. So he's played two games outside and he's got 290 yards on just 13 catches. Like, and now you go indoors at Jerry World on the fast track there.
Yeah.
You know, I just, it's hard to see Texas being able to slow him down, especially because the route tree that he's been running here in the postseason, just, he's been wide open on some of these plays. So yeah, I mean, I would fully expect him to continue to have a, you know, a really, really big set of games here, hopefully with these last two, I would hope.
All right, Adam, anything else on Ohio State and Tennessee? I imagine you'll be writing it up for the website as well as the week goes on.
So I actually gave that one to Zach because I don't want to Zach Cohen, my senior editor. I don't want to seem like I'm too biased. I'm actually writing up the Orange Bowl with Notre Dame and Penn State. But I will say this, over at DraftKings, just as a kind of transition here before we take a short break, if you look at the head-to-head rushing yards props for the semifinals, Quinshon Judkins is minus 105 against Jeremiah Love, minus 115 on his side. Travion Henderson is plus 110 with Jeremiah Love minus 130 in semifinal head-to-head rushing props here. Henderson had the long run in the game against Oregon where he kind of put things away a little bit, but he had 94 yards on just eight carries in that game. You and I were talking about this. I don't want to steal your thunder, but I think if you look at the chance that Ohio State starts fast and can kind of do what they did against Oregon and run the football a lot and just kind of chew up clock, Judkins and Henderson with more rushing yards than Jeremiah Love makes sense.
Yeah, and we'll get into a best bet of mine, and we'll talk more about it in depth on the other side, but I'll just say this. Jeremiah Love's not healthy, and that is a unfortunate situation for Notre Dame. Obviously, Penn State's dealing with some injuries, too, with Abdul Carter. We'll see his health status going into the Orange Bowl, but Jeremiah Love has had a massive knee brace on his right knee down at the Sugar Bowl, and all reports from practice over the weekend were not great regarding Jeremiah Smith. So, yeah, I think both of those are definitely worth a play, especially if the game state goes, as you kind of have pointed out, that it is a lead early for Ohio State and that they can rely a little bit on the run game. So, you know, I'll say this, as bettors, we only have three games left. Obviously, side and totals are going to be very tight. We did see movement on a total today on Monday, but there are lots of props out there, lots of unique ways to attack these games from a betting standpoint. All right, let's take that break that we mentioned. We'll come back. We'll talk a little Orange Bowl, Notre Dame, and Penn State. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Big day here at VSiN, by the way. And Adam, you might have a little bit more insight than I do, but if you follow us on social media at VSiN Live, we are headed back to Sirius XM as a network. January 17th, 24/7, we'll be on channel 158. And we will also be heard, one of our shows and two of our colleagues will be heard on the Mad Dog radio station, Sirius XM, channel 82. It'll be VSiN Live from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern with Patrick Maher and Dustin Sweetelson. That starts tonight, January 6th, there on Mad Dog Radio. So a return, a reunion of sorts for Patrick and Dustin on Mad Dog Radio starting tonight, which is it's exciting, man, for VSiN.
Yeah, it's really exciting for VSiN for sure. So I can give you a few things here. Yeah, so the Mad Dog Show, 7 to 10 Eastern, as you mentioned, channel 82. I'm actually on the first episode which I don't know if people will have heard this yet or not, but Dustin reached out. You know, I was a regular guest on their previous show on VSiN, which I can't believe the name escapes me now. Shame on me for that. But Dustin and Patrick were doing that show from Bar Canada at the D, but now doing the Mad Dog Show. Sharp Money, there you go. Thank you. Appreciate that. The other one that I can mention is that I heard through the grapevine that for those who listen to the Mad Dog Show and are interested in maybe trying out being a VSiN Pro subscriber, there will be a special offer based on the Mad Dog Show. So listen for that with Patrick and Dustin there on Channel 82.
Beautiful. Yeah, good times. Exciting times here at VSiN. And we're going to keep doing our thing on VSiN and all our forms as well, YouTube TV, as well as our app. Make sure you get the VSiN Watch app, and our podcast is a part of that as well. So we just broke down Ohio State and Texas, Notre Dame, Penn State. I will be there. I'm looking very much forward to it. Hopefully it is better than the last time I visited Hard Rock Stadium. I forget the name of it at the time, 12 years ago, when I was sitting at the game, Adam.
Joe Robbie? Is that what it was?
I don't know. Was it Landshark Stadium at that point? Someone will let us know. What was it, January of 2013? It should have been Alabama Ass-Kicking Stadium, because that's what I witnessed. As I looked over to my left when Notre Dame came out of the tunnel, and then I saw Alabama came out of the tunnel, and I looked at my brother-in-law who I was there at the game with. I said, oh, we're in some trouble. And we were. We meeting Notre Dame. It was 28-0 at halftime, 42-14 the final. And that game wasn't even as close as the 42-14 final score indicated. I do not anticipate that type of ass whooping at the hands of Notre Dame, but certainly could they lose? Yeah, it's certainly possible. And I know I am never going to live down the Notre Dame or the Georgia pick. At least Mike Palm will never let me live it down, because I was on Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, and I certainly was pleasantly surprised the performance that I saw. But last Thursday night, on VSiN Primetime, as soon as the game ended and we got those lines came out, Notre Dame, Penn State, Adam, I immediately played under 47.5, which was widely available. We saw it get whacked down to 45, 45.5 today. We were talking a little bit about it off the air. I still would play under 45.5, which is out there. I think this game is very similar to what we just saw between Notre Dame and Georgia. I think Notre Dame, from an offensive standpoint, they don't have, when they're playing A&M, Georgia, Penn State, they just don't have these explosive playmakers. And I think they're going to want to grind it out. And their most explosive playmaker, Jeremiah Love, is not 100% healthy. And I'll just read you, you know, some of the tweets that were coming out of practice the other day. I was listening to Irish Illustrated's podcast, and they were talking about how Jeremiah Love looked. It was not promising. And this is what Pete Sampson over at The Athletic, who will be on my program, VSiN Primetime, with Matt Eumanns tonight at 9:30 Eastern, he said, brace on right knee, limited in activity, looked more limited than the open practice 4 days before Indiana. He got injured, Adam, did not return against Georgia. And I think there's some opportunities out there. We alluded to it in the head-to-head markets. I bet under 52.5 rushing yards yesterday at William Hill Caesars here in town. It's now 48.5. I still would look under, man. I think he's going to be a little bit of a decoy. I think he's going to play, so you will get action. But I just can't envision him having the explosive type of runs that we saw from him all year long. And even in the Indiana game, when he went 98 yards to the house in the first quarter.
Yeah, look, this is a really tough game for me from a spread standpoint. And I think a lot of it is because of the Jeremiah Love injury. You know, I mean, they had the kick return touchdown against Georgia. They had
short field on a turnover.
Yeah, I was going to call for a sidebar here, but what the fuck was Kirby Smart thinking?
So, but I tweeted it out, and it was the first thing I discussed on the show. And look, Kirby Smart, as I stated on the show, don't come at me, Georgia fans. I know he's got two rings. He's a very good coach, maybe the best coach in the game right now. It's very possible with, you know, Nick Saban retiring. That was a boneheaded decision. You have a first-time quarterback. You're down 6-3. Yes, you're kicking off the ball to start the second half, but your defense is playing well. It's 33 seconds. And I thought, I saw someone point this out on social media, and I apologize who it was, but it was a good point. Kirby Smart tried to ice the kicker. So clearly he had the mindset of, we're probably not going to go and score. if you know you're going to try to go and score, you wouldn't waste one of your three timeouts at the end of the first half. You would keep all three and say, let's go. And I thought that lost him the game, man. I really did. Now, there were other, you know, look, ETN fumbling on a 7-play drive. That was a hell of a hit by Adon Shuler from Notre Dame. But I thought the fumble by Gunnar Stockton, nailed from the blind side from RJ Oben, I thought Kirby Smart, that was a boneheaded decision. And I thought that really cost him the game. You could argue, well, the kickoff return, all that. It's 6-3 going into the half. Okay, the kickoff return happens, Adam. You're still down 13-3, and Notre Dame's offense hadn't really done a whole lot moving the football. Yeah, I thought that was a really bad decision by Kirby, and it bit him in the ass.
No, it absolutely did. And look, I mean, you know, I don't know what you're hoping to achieve there, right? Like, maybe you get in field goal range to try something from 50-something, whatever, but again, I mean, they're just, the risk-reward wasn't there. And you're right. I mean, that to me, I think that pretty much decided the game, where you had that 14-point swing, you know, really 17-point swing, I guess, if you include the field goal, where, you know, Notre Dame special teams were just phenomenal. And I don't know if maybe Mike Bobo made a huge mistake. Maybe Kirby didn't want that, but maybe Bobo just kind of went, you know, off script and did his own thing. I don't know. But like, there wasn't a whole lot to that point that would have suggested that Gunnar Stockton was going to get you in field goal range at that point in time, or, you know, even something better, break off a big play. Just a complete mistake. And it makes it difficult to handicap this game, because those 17 points were the majority of Notre Dame's scoring. Yep. A gift short field and a kick return touchdown. And a hell of a return, by the way. But just, like, so now I don't know, right? Because Riley Leonard is not creating a whole lot of explosive plays through the air. They only had 10.5 yards per reception coming into this game. Their top two wide receivers, Collins and Greathouse, 12.4 yards per catch each. Like, Riley Leonard is not creating explosive plays for you in the passing game. And he had the most explosive run of that game, the 32-yard run that he had. So, like, I think this Notre Dame offense is very, very limited. And the Love situation makes them even more limited. At the same time, this defense is legitimately good. And the thing that's been a separator here for Penn State, while everyone's, you know, getting excited about Drew Aller and his first round, you know, projection and all these types of things, it's been the running game for Penn State. Their last three games here, 115 carries, 702 yards, 6.1 yards per carry against Oregon and in their two playoff games. But Notre Dame has an exceptionally good run defense. So the spread on this game probably comes down to something on special team, spread and the winner of the game, something on special teams, whichever quarterback turns the football over, something like that. But man, it's hard to see points in this game. It really, truly is.
Yeah. And to your point, right, Notre Dame, and I don't know the exact numbers off the top of my head, but they're either one or two, Adam, in man-to-man coverage. They trust their corners, even losing Benjamin Morrison, a guy that's probably going to be a first-round pick. Leonard Moore, a true freshman, has stepped in, and he's been exceptional. Christian Gray has had his moments. He's certainly a guy that the opposition has looked to attack. The big reception from Arian Smith that had the 15-yard penalty from the walk-on who stepped into the white area. I mean, has that dude been cut from Georgia yet? That poor guy. That was at Christian Gray. I think Notre Dame's going to have a very similar mindset going into this game, which is Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen are legitimately big time stud running backs. We've got good linebackers. We've got a good defensive line, even though Riley Mills is out for the year. Beat us through the air. And Drew Aller made some good plays early in the Fiesta Bowl, but I thought as the game wore on, Boise State was able to get some pressure on him, and I thought he made some errant throws. So, you know, I said it going into the Notre Dame Georgia game, a game that I thought Georgia would win. I also liked the under, but didn't. Everyone gave me shit about Notre Dame winning the game, and I picked Georgia. I was like, I also had the under too. It was no big deal. But regardless, the turnovers were the difference. Special teams were the difference, right? Notre Dame special teams were spectacular. they're outside of, I don't know how that's not roughing the kicker or roughing the punter on Georgia's first drive. Kirby Smart had every right to be upset about that. Yeah, so under 47.5 was the first play I made. I made it last Thursday. 45.5 probably still would look that way. The only way I see this going over, Adam, and it's certainly possible, turnovers and mistakes. But I'll say this, the two games that I feel like Notre Dame recognized they probably don't have the superior athletes offensively, Texas A&M and Georgia, what'd they do? Very safe game plan, run the football, run some outs. I think Jordan Faison is probably a guy that they'll involve quite a bit. He got four catches for 46 yards against Georgia. He'd gotten, I think, a jet sweep or two. So, yeah, I think it's a low-scoring game. I can't pick the side, though. I think the spread is right. I wouldn't argue with anyone if they wanted to take a little plus money on Penn State from a money line standpoint. But we also have to talk about their injuries too, Adam. Is Abdul Carter going to be healthy for this game? Because that is a difference maker. That's a top five pick. And I know he tweeted out something to the effect that he's going to play, or he put some gif out there. I don't know what it meant. But I think you're going to see Abdul Carter. I think you're going to see Jeremiah Love. I think you're going to see Howard Cross. I'm almost certain you're going to see Cross and Love. But how healthy are those three guys going into the game? If Abdul Carter's not 100%, this Penn State defense is a little bit different, right? That's a dude that wreaks havoc coming off of the edge.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, a guy that can kind of set the edge and contain, right? And kind of keep Riley Leonard from getting out and scrambling and moving around. Because, you know, ultimately, and I realize there's a very negative connotation in calling somebody this, Riley Leonard is a game manager. And he's a pretty damn good one at that. 15 rushing touchdowns, 18-6 touchdown interception ratio, only taking 15 sacks here through the, 14 games that they've played. Those are all really good things. That's what you want a game manager type of quarterback to be. And I think that's the reason why Marcus Freeman went to the portal and said, we want this kind of guy, right? We know we can run the football. We know our defense is good. Just don't burn us. That's kind of all we want. Right? It's all we need you to do. Complete some third downs. Shorten the sticks a little bit by moving around and avoiding negative plays. That's all we want you to do. And if a guy like Abdul Carter is not going to be, you know, fully healthy and able to go for Penn State, you know, a good number of, pretty high share of the percentage snaps on defense, then that is very problematic. And I think this is an important thing to point out, right? We can talk about Notre Dame. We can talk about their limited offense. We can talk about how they let Indiana kind of back in the game in the fourth quarter. That game was not nearly as close as that score would indicate. I don't care what people say.
27-3 was the final score.
They beat Georgia by more. Bullshit. They just let Indiana back
Cignetti
in the game.
Cignetti punted the ball, and that's the classic Cignetti, let me make this look better than it really was. They conceded on that game, and Notre Dame was like, all right, if they're punting on fourth down in the fourth quarter, we're not going to show anything more. And, congratulations, only losing by 10.
And this is the thing, right? Maybe it's because this was the standalone game on Thursday night, and maybe it just feels like an eternity ago. But Penn State did not impress me against Boise State. Like, Boise State left points on the field. Maddox Madsen had the three interceptions, didn't play particularly well. Genty, it was tough finding running room as we expected it to be, but that dude still had a lot of yards after contact in that game.
He's a beast, man.
He's a beast. He played as well as he possibly could. Boise State was never going to be able to hold up in the trenches against a Big Ten team like Penn State.
I was impressed by their D-line, man. I thought their D-line late in that game was getting pressure.
Yeah, I mean, they were definitely hanging in there for sure. Notre Dame is a massive step up from Boise State and from SMU. So I never really thought Penn State was all that good throughout the course of the season. Tyler Shoemaker and I got into it because his rankings, I mean, both of us had them rated highly, but just from the eye test, I just never thought Penn State was all that good. Like, if they can't find Tyler Warren in the passing game, their passing game sucks. So I don't know which way this game goes. I know both of these teams are very, very good at forcing turnovers. I mean, they've got 55 combined takeaways on the season. So it probably just comes down to that. And for that reason, I can't bet the side, but I'll take my chances that we don't get a pick six or a kick six or something like that you know, a kick return touchdown. I'll just take the under here.
Yeah, under for me, and then under on Jeremiah Love rushing yards. I it seemed too high with all the reports coming out. Look, he had 20 days to go from getting injured against USC to playing against Indiana, and he had an explosive run, and then outside of that, he was kind of bottled up. And if you're Penn State, you're selling out on the run too. So it's a twofold situation. So I don't know how much Jeremiah Love is used. If you want to correlate that and find some Jadarian Price over, I certainly wouldn't be opposed to that. But Jeremiah Love under, I think once again, I think I saw it was 52.5 on Sunday, 48.5 now out there at, I think, Caesars William Hill. FanDuel is sitting at, I think, 44.5. So we've seen a little bit of under there. But I just, from everything that I'm hearing from reports from Notre Dame reporters, Jeremiah Love is not healthy and probably is not going to be healthy come Thursday night.
One other thing I will say here is, you know, we kind of saw it. I mean, we've seen, we'll call them theatrics. We've seen some theatrics here with guys, you know, cramping up and this and that and, you know, everything throughout the bowl season, throughout the college football playoff. You've got two teams here from cold weather cities going down to Miami where it's not going to be super hot, but it's always humid down there, right? So if you have a team that really wins the time of possession battle in the first half, that's getting those third down conversions, chewing up clock, big long drives, stuff like that, you know, that may be a live betting look that you want to consider for the second half or something like that. The defenses, I think, have a good chance at wearing down a little bit in this game, just given the conditions, given the humidity, which, you know, I mean, you don't really deal with that in South Bend or in Happy Valley, you know, in the winter months. So I think that's something that could be a factor here where you think about that in terms of game state, right? If you've got, even if it's just a field goal drive, one of those 12, 13, 14, 15 play drives that eat up 6, 7, 8 minutes, which is possible here, because again, I don't think we see a lot of explosive plays. That war of attrition may kind of wear one of these two teams down in the second half. So that may be something that you want to take a look at here as this game goes along.
Yeah, Tyler Warren, he's kind of the X factor to me. And to an extent, Mitchell Evans for Notre Dame. But Tyler Warren does everything for Penn State. And how does Notre Dame try to slow him down?
I guess we got to mention this then, right? If we're talking about keys and focal points, Marcus Freeman versus James Franklin, right? I mean,
Marcus Freeman beat Kirby Smart.
Yeah.
And I was.
And he should. I mean, say what you will about Ryan Day. He should have beaten Ryan Day last year, too.
Yeah.
Well, a guy that James Franklin absolutely cannot beat.
I still, you know, Marcus Freeman, yes, has some bad losses on his ledger, whether it be Marshall, whether it be Stanford. Those were in year one, Northern Illinois this year. But the maturation we've seen from him as a game manager, as a coach, has been phenomenal. And he's got a different mentality. I was doing a post-game podcast with Pete Sampson on The Independent, the Notre Dame podcast, Adam, and I've been blown away by the aggressiveness we've seen from him. You know, to do the okey-doke, whatever that was, on the punt team to confuse Georgia, to get them to jump off sides, to elongate that drive. This is a big game. I mean, this is going to sound so stupid, but this is so big for James Franklin, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, for Marcus Freeman, I could speak to it as a Notre Dame fan. He's kind of won the season. You just beat Georgia, a team that they haven't essentially beaten in three decades. You just won the Sugar Bowl. I know Notre Dame fans want to win the national championship, but it almost feels like at this point, everything else is gravy. For Penn State, as you pointed out, you beat SMU, you beat Boise State. It's still big game James. He kind of has to win one of these games. So it does feel a little bit like Notre Dame, as stupid as it sounds, because it's a national semifinal. Doesn't it feel like they're playing a little bit with house money here, and Penn State is kind of, the pressure's on them in this spot?
Yeah, I think so. I think you could definitely say that. And also, I mean, Notre Dame's kind of literally playing with house money because they're not sharing any of this revenue.
Damn straight, baby.
It just all goes in their pockets. But yeah, I mean, look, you know, I think something else that made me really, really happy too, when you see the video clip that's been kind of circulating of, you know, one of the Notre Dame analytics staffers, or maybe the director of analytics, whoever he was, standing right there next to Marcus Freeman, right? Like, I think James Franklin is an excellent leader of men. You know, we've seen some clips of him. Guy commits a stupid ass penalty and he's over there. You know, it's a growth moment, right? He's kind of setting them up to be adults, right? But he's a very bad in-game head coach. And I mean, both skill sets are very valuable at the college level, given what you're dealing with, especially nowadays at the college level. But he's just a bad game manager. And for Freeman to have an analytics dude right next to him, that's like straight out of the John Harbaugh type of playbook for the Baltimore Ravens. Like, that's a very successful team, organization, and franchise year in and year out because of everything that they're able to kind of mesh together. It feels like Notre Dame is at that point now with Freeman. And it could ultimately at some point be the difference in a game where I think it could be, you know, two or three plays, unlike the Ohio State Texas game, where I think it could be a number of plays and people involved and all that. This is a game where it could be one or two, maybe three plays. It just kind of changed the complexion of everything, much like Notre Dame Georgia was. I think you give Notre Dame the edge in that regard for sure.
The director of analytics that you allude to, his name is Anthony Treash. Treash. He's from Pro Football Focus. They hired him away from PFF, and he's that guy. He's the one standing behind Marcus Freeman there. And I know our buddy Eric Eager has been tweeting about him a little bit. Also a former PFFer working on a staff. He's with the Carolina Panthers, of course. All right, Adam, any final parting thoughts on these two semifinal games?
No, not on the semifinal games. I guess I just kind of have a parting thought in general on the bowl season. First of all, what a shit show. Just with the transfer portal and dudes opting out, dudes not playing. Teams like, yeah, well, you know, he's been hurt for a while, so we're not going to play him, and not a whole lot of advance notice on some of those injuries. And, you know, then you get a thing like Drew Mestemaker for North Texas, where like dude barely played quarterback in high school and throws for almost 400 yards. Like, these things are an absolute mess. And some of them provided some drama. Some of them provided some pretty good insights. Some of them provided just absolute blowouts. And the market was right on a lot of those games. But just, I mean, this is only going to get worse going forward. So the bowl season, I mean, just take it for what it is and for what it's worth, understanding that, you know, it's just going to be a race to news, and that's going to be true of when the bowl pairings are announced to pretty much all the way up until kickoff.
I've loved this bowl season from a betting standpoint. I like the fact that we as bettors have an opportunity to kind of pull one on the books, because it is an information situation. It is motivational. And, you know, sometimes you wait to day of and you're able to kind of just sniff it out. You could go in game on some of these. You know, you and I, give us credit, our first bet on this podcast was UConn +4.5. They win the game outright against a UNC team that wanted nothing to do with playing at Fenway Park, right? So it's been a fun bowl season for me personally, and hopefully the listeners. I feel like we've been able as a podcast to kind of sniff a lot of these out. But yeah, it's the wild, wild west, but I love that they're on television. I've always said that bowl games are the best background noise, and we've had some really entertaining ones, man. I mean, we had a stretch from, you know, the Potato Bowl that I was on the sidelines for, to the Hawaii Bowl, to I forget which one was the next one up. Oh, that crazy Toledo Pittsburgh game where Pat Nardope decided to keep kicking extra points, and I think he was unaware of the third quarter rule. We've had some fun ones, I'll say that. And I think it's been an enjoyable bowl season just from a viewership standpoint.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I did pretty well throughout the course of the bowl season too, just, you know, kind of reading the tea leaves, sort of reading, you know, games where it matters more to players. And, you know, I think that the one thing is that, you know, like, there were some teams that completely no-showed. But, you know, when you start talking about having 10, 12, 15, 20 players in the portal, something like that, I don't know that you really want to consider motivation as strongly, because the kids getting an opportunity are going to be motivated, right? And the coaches are going to be motivated because they want those kids to improve and succeed and, you know, be better for the next season. So, yeah, maybe the guys who are opting out kind of give the appearance that there's not a whole lot of motivation, but those kids who are still playing, maybe getting their first opportunity of the season, they're motivated.
Well,
like I said, the kid for North Texas threw for 393. Like, he got a chance to start a college football game at quarterback. And they covered pretty much with ease against a Texas State team that ran out to an easy double-digit favorite. So, you know, it's
How about Zevi Eckhaus, who was playing at Bryant, you know, in the NEC, and he goes out there and, you know, they don't cover. I was able to get to the window because I took Syracuse kind of earlier on. I didn't get the crazy good number at, I think, 3 or whatever it was. I got 13.5. But I think that game closed near 20. And Washington State, as crazy as this sounds, I was almost blown away by how they looked like a football team in the Holiday Bowl. And they were winning after the first quarter, Washington State was. But yeah, it was fun. Also, don't fade military academies in bowl games. Just don't do it. Because it looked like Oklahoma was going to blow them out, and then Navy ended up winning the game. The only thing I'll give credit to Brent Venables for in that game was going for 2 at the end of the game. Thank you for not forcing that game to go to overtime.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, we had some really good – we had some great bowl games and just some
debacles. Oh, there were some duds. But there were definitely some duds. Yeah, there were no doubt some duds. And how about Alabama? Ooh, buddy. I'll say this. This will be my last thought here is because on that first pod you and I had, we were looking through the bowl games. My first two bets, UConn plus 4.5. And then I took Michigan and I wrote it up for the guide as well. And I bet 11.5. It closed, what, 17? I'm like, well, this one's a loser. So I ended up throwing Alabama in like a money line parlay to just try to get off that side a little bit. And boy, give credit to Michigan, but what a dud you saw from Alabama in that bowl game on New Year's Eve.
Yeah. And I mean, it was a monsoon, right? It was an ugly football game, especially early on.
But the sun came out in the second half there.
Yeah, but still, I mean, Michigan scored 16 of their 19 points in that first quarter where things were just kind of a bit of a mess. It really makes me wonder because I'm a huge Kalen DeBoer guy. And obviously, we know what he did with Washington last year. He's the guy who really helped Michael Penix at Indiana, let alone helping him at Washington. I'm a big Kalen DeBoer guy. I don't know what to think of Alabama going into next season. Like, he's probably going to get a quarterback that's a much better fit for him, you know, heading into next year. And I think that's a big positive. But it was an ugly, very ugly finish to the season, kind of ugly throughout the season at a lot of junctures for DeBoer. So it's tough, right? Because the SEC has kind of struggled here through the bowl season. The talent is just all over the place now with the transfer portal. Like, you've got a blue blood there in Alabama that I thought would be okay hanging on in the post-Saban world. I'm not so sure about Kalen DeBoer now.
They lost this year to Vanderbilt as a 24-point favorite, Oklahoma as a 2-touchdown favorite, and then Michigan as a, 16.5, 17-point favorite. So
yeah.
I'm with you, man. Kalen DeBoer's won everywhere he's gone, and maybe he just needs the right guys in place. Certainly had the Georgia win, which is very impressive. So we'll see. I'm not going to count them out just yet, but it was pretty eye-opening to see some of the losses that they had this year. I'm fired up, man. It's going to be one of the best weekends on the calendar with 2 semifinals Thursday, Friday night, then Super Wild Card weekend, Adam. VSiN.com will have all of our content, best bets, VSiN.com/picks. We're going to have more podcasts. We'll have one with Wes Reynolds. We'll have one with Matt Eumanns as well. So stay tuned for that. For Adam Burke, you can follow him on social media at Skating Tripods. I'm at 1 Tim Murray. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.